All right, everybody, welcome back to an exciting episode of Classical Pairings. If you are like me, you have gone north on College Avenue many, many times in Indianapolis. You pass the Bottle Works, you go north past 10th and 11th, and there's this cute little, right before the bridge, this like very charming little, I have no idea how old this building is, but this series of shops, and you've always thought, you know what, I should go in that one day. Well, it turns out many people do go in, and I am currently sitting in one of those shops right now at the Leviathan Bakehouse at College and 11th. It's packed in here, it's busy, it's beautiful, and I'm very fortunate to be here with two of the owners, Jesse Blythe and Matt Steinburn, the two owners, or are there two of?
There's two more.
Two more. There are two more. So many owners. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And we are going to be talking about various breads and desserts and their process and what they're doing here. And hopefully get you to stop by and try some of the selections. We'll be pairing it with some classical music as we go. So, all right. Thank you so much for being here. Jesse and Matt, do you want
to
introduce yourself
real quick?
Yeah,
happy to be here. Thank you.
Let them be, like, so that they can know whose voice is who. So, Jesse. Yeah.
I'm Jesse.
How you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing well.
How long have you been in the bread game?
I'd say about 5 years now.
Okay.
My brother and I were baking for another restaurant here in town.
Okay.
And then we met one of our other partners and decided to open this place.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. And Matt?
Matt.
What about you?
Yep.
Is bread a lifelong passion or a new love?
I mean, it's been almost 15 years at this point.
Okay.
So after finishing culinary school, it was travel through casino country clubs until actually I was introduced to one of our other owners, Pete, pretty early on in the game, probably about 14 years ago. And throughout our time, we had never worked together. And eventually it was winter of 2019 when we, all four of us, previously five, basically got together and said, is this the right time? Is this something that we want to pull off? And that's pretty much.
So that was winter of 19.
Yeah.
And so I'm remembering my history well. And it seems like you guys nailed it.
Yeah.
Like you totally got the timing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yep.
About 3 months later, the whole world shut down.
Yeah. Well, well done.
That's
impressive.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that you're still standing here is actually pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
How did you manage that?
Some of it, I mean, all of us, like, one of the core things that really resonate with our ownership is we are good at doing the work, like getting it done. So it's never really been a question of how are we going to do this? It's always been we're going to do this, therefore it's going to happen.
Okay.
And part of the equation for us being successful is we already had the plan to build into online ordering. We already had the plan to build into the wages that were going to be sort of expected at this point in time.
Yeah.
So most of everything that we've done was part of the plan to be able to weather these types of things.
Okay, great. So what makes you guys unique?
I think it's... we're sort of a little bit of everything here. It's like a mix of a coffee shop, a bakery, a breakfast spot, a brunch spot, and...
so you have a full kitchen in addition to the bakery?
We have a full kitchen.
Okay, great. Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Continue.
That's okay.
No, you're good.
So it's... I think that's a big part of it.
Uh-huh.
A lot of other shops around town, they have their one thing that they do, and they can do it super well.
Mm-hmm.
We have somehow managed to take... four, maybe even five different concepts and fuse it into one cohesive thing and make it work.
So are most of the, like, the breads and pastries and stuff, are those made here?
Oh, yeah. Everything. We make everything in-house.
Make everything in-house.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
That is probably the most, the core unifying peculiarity of ours is we do, like, we're sourcing grains from Anderson.
Janie's Mill. Local mill.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
like our bread from scratch. Even our syrups and our coffees, like, we don't use pump purchases. We're making that from scratch. We actually grind the hazelnuts for the seasonal drink that we're doing with hazelnut in it.
Wow. Okay. So, because I was looking at y'all's website, and because I was trying to, like, okay, I need to come. I'm gonna have to come up with some music. Let me just sort of get my brain thinking about bread.
Yeah.
And then I saw, okay, well, they have like 80 different things.
Yeah.
So thank you for making my life difficult.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I could have been like, oh, they make eclairs and that's
it. Yeah, they do one thing.
I'll think of some eclair music, but instead I'm like, okay, every type of bread that has existed in the world.
Yeah.
But that said, are there a few? So you have a lot of variety. Are there a few hits? Mm-hmm. Like a few that like a couple things when people come in their first time. What would you direct people to?
Just based on the numbers alone, our breakfast sandwich is like our number one selling item.
Okay, with fresh baked bread. I'm assuming.
Yeah, it comes on one of our croissants, which are baked fresh every day.
Okay.
If we're talking more about strictly a baked, like just bread or pastry, I'd say either the baguettes or we have one here called the Queen Amon, which is one of my favorites. Queen Amon, it's a laminated pastry. It has layers of sugar, butter, and the croissant dough.
Okay.
So when it bakes, it gets real caramelized and flaky on the outside.
Is that what laminated means? It doesn't mean that you wrap it in like tight plastic. I'm sorry. I'm not.
No, you're good.
Man. Okay. You got feel the lamination.
I made some sourdough
question.
During the pandemic, like everybody did. Because, you know,
And essentially.
And I think I still have some starter that is black. I'm sorry.
It's happened to me more times than I can count.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about staging. You have the dough, like just typical bread dough, maybe a little bit enriched with butter or eggs, and you're basically taking cold or room temperature butter. You're trying to match the texture of the bread itself and the butter texture, and you're basically rolling it out and then folding it on top of each other, rolling it out and folding it on top of each other. So you end up with layers, very thin layers of bread, very thin layers of butter. And that's how that puff basically happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's croissant, Danish, puff pastry, Queen Amon, all of those. Okay. Laminated pastry.
So people would find things that are in the, is that the French style? I'm sorry, I'm kind of ignorant.
Viennoiserie, yes.
Yeah.
Are there like German thick bread or rye bread kind of stuff here? I don't know if those are very popular around here.
We pull inspiration from a lot.
Yeah. Okay. There's sort of different areas that we've, like Matt said, pulled inspiration from and then made our own thing out of it.
Okay.
Yeah,
so.
A lot of it is old world technique using naturally leavened grain starters to be able to pull from that.
Okay. So how's being in this location then? It's an interesting location, right? Because we're right by where the construction's been going on for a couple years, right? And then right down, we've been surrounded by construction right the entire time we've been open. In this spot that people go by, but sometimes don't see. But at the same time, you're packed in here right now. And it's like 2 in the afternoon. Like, it's not afternoon. So how do you think, I guess I'm asking you two questions here. I'm sorry.
What's
it been like being here? And how have you managed to attract like such a loyal following already?
As far as the location goes, it's good because it's on a busy street, which a lot of cars drive by every day. So just
visibility
is huge on that front.
Yeah.
And then the neighborhood itself, the old Northside neighborhood, there's like a lot of people that like us in that neighborhood as well.
Local community. Yeah. We're pretty accessible, and I mean, it doesn't hurt to be really close to the Mass Avenue Strip and the Bottle Works building going in with all that construction. The 65 and 70 construction that's been going on has really been a little bit of a pain for us, back and forth, road closures out front. Literally, we had to purchase a big banner sign, and then the construction, made off with it.
They stole our sign.
Like, say, hey, no, we're open. The street's not really open, but we're open.
Yeah.
And like, one day, that sign was just gone.
That's too bad.
So, they didn't like it very much, so.
Yeah. It's been interesting, because I'm looking at the numbers a lot, and the business itself, you can see how busy we are right now. This place is almost completely packed.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it's been just a wonderful experience, and we're really, really blessed with the kind of following that we've been.
I don't think the construction had as big of an impact as we thought it was going to.
Oh, okay.
I'll say that. Okay. There was there was really no rhyme or reason to it some days. The road would be closed down, and we would be just as busy as this, if not more so. And then some days it would be closed, and it was.
Okay.
Not
it's
super
relieving,
busy.
Really.
So it's,
to not have to
a testament to what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
People
find a way to get
constant construction, and you're packed.
Yeah.
Which is, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Talk
doing
to me
something right.
About, maybe I'm switching topics pretty drastically here.
No worries.
Talk to me about creativity, right? So this is, we're going to get to music here in a little bit. I want to hear about some things that you guys have done creatively, either on the like business running aspect, customer building, that kind of thing, or just on the literal recipes baking aspect.
Sure.
Like, where do you guys think you guys thrive most creatively? Or if it's both, give me an example.
Yeah. Matt, I think this is your field. I just sort of hang out up front and sell everything without all the geniuses in the back make.
Oh, don't discredit yourself.
Well, no, I'm kind of joking.
I understand.
I'm joking a little bit.
But yeah, honestly, most of the inspiration and creativity gets kind of forged from what we already know is a reliability. And what's interesting for me is, when I went to culinary school, there was always this push and there's always this expectation that, hey, you got to be innovative. You have to be at the top of this and that. You have to push. You have to this, that, or the other. But, and I came out of culinary school with that mentality. Throughout my journey in the last 15 years, it's really tempered expectations because I knew, but it wasn't really adopted until this location, this business venture, that I understood. We're in Indiana, and we have clients and guests, and just our community has certain expectations. And if you can meet those expectations and exceed them, like, that's the perfect relationship, because we need to be able to be self-sufficient, and we can't necessarily sell a completely idealized business, because it first and foremost has to be functional. People want to come in and get bread. People want to come in and get coffee. People want to come in and get quiche. They want to celebrate with their family. They want to have a place where they can just relax, hang out, sit on their computers, work on who knows what. But at the end of the day, we have presented things that aren't out of the ordinary, but we're doing it from scratch. We're doing it with a little bit more labor of love included in it. So that's something that I don't see mass scale or able to be mass scaled. And with the globalized industry that we're seeing right now, you lose that personality in the mix of everything. So having a local place that tries to create and work within the community aspect of this is really the thing that's at the forefront of us. So as far as creativity goes, we're sort of launching from that core idea of, this is Indiana, we're going to try and work with Indiana, if at all possible, Midwest, if at all possible.
You mean like growers? And
yeah, growers, farmers, grain, millers, all of that, creators. And honestly, that's where the creativity comes in, because we'll see somebody doing something down the street and we'll be like, oh yeah, that exists. let's think about that. And then possibly...
What do you mean?
I mean, with social media being so prevalent, like we follow our competitors and our communities. So when they have something new that they're working on, that starts getting our motor running.
Interesting.
And sort of having a build off of that idea. And for me, I typically organize my thoughts and plans based on the calendar, because like, I have to have something visual to be able to like slot things into. So with the idea of seasonality, you know sort of what's coming in with harvest schedule and availability. So if you look at that as sort of the skeletal blueprint for creativity, you know that this is coming up in March. You know, this is coming up in
summer. So are you saying
summer.
That like the menu varies a little bit based on like harvesting and stuff like that? Feels... That's kind of neat. That feels very old world. That's kind of fun. I like that. Okay.
It's the way it should be in our minds.
That makes sense.
So, like,
so
you're using based off of the seasons and the freshest ingredients and what's available that time of year. For me, I think the biggest creative aspect is not necessarily one individual being creative. It's bouncing ideas off of. It's sort of a collaborative effort between everyone here. And if one person has one idea, then this person over here says, oh, what if we added that to it? And then this person over here will... You get what I'm saying? It's like it's like a joint effort of creativity between 5-6 different people.
Yeah.
and that allows us to come up with something really good.
Something as a final form, bounced off of multiple individuals to be able to sort of like proof of concept it and then bring it to fruition.
Okay. So when you're, so now I'm picturing, I haven't really thought about this before, but so you have to like be constantly thinking about when you're going to be getting certain fresh grains and that sort of thing. And like you have an ideal menu, but you have to sort of make it all flexible to match all of that.
Yep.
It's very interesting. Have you found that your customers respond well to the probably seasonal variety and that sort of thing? And or do you get people that are, why don't you have the thing that I liked three months ago?
We definitely get that. Okay. We get a lot of that. I think people don't even realize what that it's happening. They're just excited to see something new.
That makes sense.
And whether, whether they like make the connection of, oh, figs are in season right now, that's why they have a fig Danish on the menu. They'll just see a fig Danish and think, that's cool, I want to eat that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Fig Danish, that's okay. Yeah. So I would have never made that connection, right? I don't think about that, the world of harvesting. Yeah. And that, I mean, other than in like board games or video games.
That's fair.
I don't.
Yep. Farming, all that. Yep.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But I don't, I wouldn't think of it in impacting a menu. And I think that's, I mean, that's probably, you were talking about the big national chains. I mean, the big national things always provide the same thing all the time. And like, and that's the shtick. But that's, so it is, in many ways, it has pulled people from an awareness of the earth that we're actually on, if that makes sense. And like seasonality and that sort of thing, which I've never really realized until right now. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of interconnectivity with this. And I mean, we do have the core menu where we're really never going to get rid of these things because they are just, they're popular, so they're going to stay. The regular croissant, the chocolate croissant. People love chocolate. Chocolate accounts for like half of a menu just on any given time for pastry.
Yeah. Chocolate's just always in season.
Absolutely. And then you have your highly seasonal items, which make up probably about 15 to 20, maybe 30% of our menu, depending on certain seasons.
Okay.
But we'll rotate out those types to breathe some freshness into it. Our quiche changes pretty much weekly. For the time, we were doing soups for a while, and those would change pretty frequently as well. Just trying to keep with both making the customers and guests that really, really have the items that they want every single time, and balancing that main menu with the seasonality inclusion.
Okay. I think I'm getting hungry now.
Yeah.
All this time. And it smells amazing in here.
Absolutely.
How about we do a couple tastings? All right. Yeah, so, because if you guys want to pick a couple things, I'll pair it to some music. We'll see how it goes.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You'll find some stuff.
Should I just hang out here now?
Do you have anything that you're like, that you've seen that you were thinking of in particular?
Yeah. Come take a look.
All right, we are back. So we have done a quick little stroll around the display cabinet. Beautiful, all sorts of things that I can see going broke here pretty quickly. with all the choices, look fantastic. And even, like, it looks like you can also, I'm assuming we're kind of near the end of Friday, right? It's a little bit, but there's still a lot of choices in there.
Yep.
So I saw lots of options. I'm sure if someone comes in the morning, there's more. And lots of seasonal choices. We were looking at, so we're recording this in December. People will probably hear this more in the winter. But I definitely saw some like flavors that look perfect for the holidays. Do you happen to know anything, we'll get to these in just a second, like a preview of like March-ish? Like what kind of flavors might be looking for?
March is likely, we're definitely going to be seeing closer to rhubarb season.
We'll have some rhubarb coming
in the mix. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll be coming off of Valentine's.
This might be out by Valentine's. What sort of flavors would people...
So the black hearts are going to be back for year three. Those things, the year that we debuted them, I think we had a line of tickets that were on the floor before we opened. Online orders for those, it blew absolutely up.
Okay.
But that's a milk chocolate and passion fruit.
Oh, wow. Okay. That sounds
dessert
amazing.
For there.
Okay. All right. But I'm also looking at two amazing things here. So which one are we starting with?
The eclair first.
The eclair first. All right. So what kind of eclair is this?
This is a pumpkin speculoos and orange eclair.
Say that again. Okay, what?
Pumpkin speculoos. Speculoos cookies, kind of like Biscoff.
It's Speculoos? Mm-hmm. Is that like a Harry Potter spell, or is that like a real word? Speculoos? I'm sorry.
Speculoos cookies, like Biscoff, like cookie butter.
I've heard of Biscoff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's basically that molasses-y, warming spices flavor.
Okay, good. All right. And then I'm seeing, are those pistachios at the top?
Those are pumpkin seeds.
Pumpkin seeds.
Pepitos. Okay.
You can see how often I bake.
No, it's good.
I mean, I enjoy the thing. It's just...
no worries.
Yeah. I make cocktails. I don't do a lot of... All right, well...
That's fair. If I looked at a cocktail bar, I would not even know where to start.
Should I go ahead and grab one?
Yeah,
absolutely. We just dive in
there.
Okay. I'll just grab this.
We'll get more filling.
Are you guys having one
go
too?
For
are you
gonna
absolutely.
Yeah.
I feel like... You can't make me eat eclair alone. Cheers. Cheers. Thank you.
Pretty good.
That is heavenly.
Mm-hmm.
That is... I don't have a lot of, like, tasting notes for food, unfortunately. Again, I do for cocktails.
It's okay.
Which are always, like, ridiculous, right? You say things that are not at all in the wine or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, this gooseberry and whatever.
It's things that it reminds
this actually
you
has
of.
Ingredients.
Freshly made events.
But if you could give me a cocktail-style tasting note for this, what would you say? I can say it's delicious and
delicious.
Pumpkin-y and cinnamony, but what else would you add? Like, what are you proud of in this? If you were
I think the orange is a really interesting balance.
Okay.
Like that citrus, citrus balances out the richness of the pumpkin really well.
Yeah, you've got the deep flavors of the warming spices, the pumpkin sort of as the base note, and then the high note touch of orange citrus. In that,
talk to me about notes more. That's interesting. Like, I mean, because obviously this is a music thing, so
yeah.
You say the bass note and the high note. When you're—is that a thing you're thinking of when you're making recipes? Like in terms of the
yes, as far as flavor composition and composing actual like menu items, flavor is the complexity of it's basically musical, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're trying to round out a whole idea by taking high, mid, low notes on flavor profiles and certain ones. Exhibit certain types of flavor depth and sort of sharpness or how long it holds on the tongue, on the palate, those types of items.
Yeah.
So it is very musical adjacent.
Yeah, that's interesting. So thinking of it like in music, like a triad or a seventh chord or an 11th chord or something. You've got the root fundamental of it, but then you can add all these different ingredients on top of it to get like a richer harmonic sound.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the composition of dessert and food is taking what you know about structure, and you can treat it as a
symphony. That's really interesting. And what's fascinating to me is I didn't even notice the orange because I think I was enjoying the pumpkin and cinnamony, I guess warm spice or something.
Yeah.
I just don't know spices, so I'm calling everything cinnamon. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's all good.
I'm sure there's some cinnamon in there, right?
But, yes, absolutely.
I didn't even know. And then as soon as you said the orange, it was like it slapped me in the face. Like, it is right there.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned it because then my attention turned to it. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I mean, it was obviously there, but then... Mm-hmm. Just like a note in a chord, you might not notice one of them until a composer or a chef or somebody like brings your attention to it.
Yep.
But you notice that it sounds good.
Yes. Like I knew it was good.
You can appreciate that it sounds good and that it's like it works.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily, you wouldn't have the vocabulary to break it down.
Exactly.
Like me with a sheet of music, I could listen to it and say that sounds good.
Yeah.
Objectively. But
yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. So... Yeah. All right, I'm trying to think of some music to pair here. This is tricky.
Are we talking strictly classical music?
Classical, but with a fairly wide net, right? So, like, you know, we've done things like film scores. We've done jazz. So I guess like art music, and. But also can be very old, can be very new. So I'm also, yeah, if you guys have ideas, I'm open to them. But I'm starting to formulate some. But it's tricky. Like, I often do it. The reason I was asking for the tasting notes is the way I sometimes do it is sort of like think of adjectives to describe it, right? Yeah. So you can say warm, you can say decadent, flaky, creamy, because there was also a creamy note in it, right? And then I try to think of, okay, what's a piece of music that are that is those adjectives?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It matches those adjectives in some way.
Yeah.
And so I do think I have one that I was, because I was thinking about Eclairs earlier when I came in, because I was hoping we were going to try one when I saw them on your website, and we did, and I'm very happy.
Excellent.
So I have a piece in mind, but do either of you have one? I don't want to jump the gun.
No. Okay. You're the expert.
Okay.
Please.
Well, I'm an expert in a thing that we made up, so.
Expert nonetheless.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Aren't we all? That's literally
life. Yep.
Okay. So then the piece, I think, I don't know if it matches the pumpkin. That's my only hesitancy with this piece that I had been thinking of. But I kind of want to listen to it because I think it matches. And so it's called Serenade Italienne. It's by a French composer, but it sort of takes place. There's Italian people in the story. Arne Chasson is the composer. And in this work, we have... Well, first of all, I was kind of, because I was thinking of Eclairs, I was sort of thinking of like that kind of like French and Italian style. Mm-hmm. I think Eclairs are French, maybe.
Yep.
Right? Probably. Okay.
Absolutely.
Sort of like merging of flavors. In this piece, we have two lovers who are, who have gotten on a boat and are getting a ride. And for some reason, Eclair kind of looks like a boat.
Yeah.
So that's also what I was thinking of it.
Yeah.
And they're getting a ride from an Italian who is rowing and doesn't speak any French. And so it's the two lovers who the captain can't understand their love language, but can but like the waves can and the sun can.
Interesting.
And so it's kind of like a beautiful piece of music that sure I feel enough. Like is sort of, it's warm, it's rich, it's decadent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they eat a lot of pumpkins in France, though. That's the only problem, but that's okay.
I think they probably
otherwise,
eat some
maybe they do. Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's true. Okay. So let's go ahead and give this a listen.
Yeah.
Serenade Italienne by Arne Chasson.
Partons en barque sur la mer pour passer la nuit aux étoiles. Le vieux pêcheur italien et ses deux fils qui nous conduisent écoutent mais n'entendent rien aux mots que nos bouches se disent.
So we've been listening to Serenade Italienne. So for me, what I was sort of thinking here, and I think after hearing it again, I'm more happy with my choice than I thought I would be. Because I feel like the music, it's this sort of, it creates this moment of comfort, this sort of like, the piece is sort of capturing this, like, so you may picture these lovers on a boat glittering. It's almost like time stops.
Mm.
It's almost this moment of respite in, like, an otherwise chaotic world. And in some ways, an eclair is that, that bite. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's that, it's that, what, 30 seconds that it's in your mouth or whatever, that, depending on how fast you eat one bite, I don't know. But it's that, for that moment, it gives you, especially with flavors as rich as this one, with spice as warm as this one, it gives you a thing that you can focus on that is not everything else in life that is chaos and paperwork and, you know, bills, right? And so for that one, like, brief moment, so these lovers on their boat, that they're still sort, even though there's somebody else is paddling, so they're not even working, right? Somebody else is, but they don't have, the guy can't even understand them.
Yeah.
So they're still alone in a way, right? But they're together and alone. And so, you know, I didn't make that eclair. I can't speak that language, but I can still enjoy it.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
So, okay. What do you think of that? Does that make any sense?
I like everything you just said.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you add anything? Worked really well. I think as far as the structure of the song, where it's just a piano
and
a voice, I think that matches up well with the eclair, with it being the strong flavor of the pumpkin and the flavor of the orange playing off of each other.
Yeah.
And then for me, the other flavors and the other things in the eclair, that's sort of like the story and the background of the music. Like, that's like what you can appreciate or hear in the song, the piano and the voice, that's sort of the surface layer. And then everything else in the eclair, that's sort of like what you were talking about of the story of the two lovers, the deeper idea.
That's the full depth of complexity.
Good. I like that. And I think you've got a nice spot here so people could come in. You're just going to get a rush of people with their headphones on listening to classical music pounding eclairs.
I hope so.
That would be a sight to see.
But
like listening to music as they do it. It's like, you know, I think the two, when I come to a place like this, it can be sometimes, I think we're ingrained when we come to a shop like this, especially if you're by yourself, that you need to be like working on a thing, which is just fine. I would absolutely sit here and grade papers or write lectures or whatever it is, write articles, whatever I got to do. But I think like when it's that good that you've got to stop the work for a minute and just enjoy the thing for itself.
Yeah.
Enjoy an experience that is one thing that is not color shaded by work or something. So anyway, I guess I'm saying two things, the food and the music simultaneously. But in some ways, I think they can enrich the other and just have that moment. But,
Absolutely.
I'm rambling now, so let's maybe go ahead and do the next one, shall we?
Yeah, let's jump
in. Where are we going now?
Next flavor.
This is our, it's called a banoffee.
Banoffee.
Banana toffee.
Did you guys come up with that word, banoffee?
No, it's been around for a while.
It's been around? Okay, just, I don't hang with people to say banoffee very often.
Yeah, so. it's not
feel
super
free to
common.
Use it as much as you like.
Yeah, this is mine now.
Going forward.
I'm going to be banoffee. Yeah. Okay, so it's a banana toffee.
Brioche Danish.
Brioche, what does that mean? That's like fancy bread, right?
What would you call it? Like an enriched bread?
Yep.
Basically, oh, so it is fancy bread.
Yeah, it's basically dough that's got a lot of butter in it.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yep.
Banoffee, brioche, what was the last word?
Danish.
Danish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wait, what is that?
It's sort of a format classification of pastry, breakfast pastry.
I've always pictured, because I'm looking at something that...
Yeah, because the traditional expectation for danishes...
Like, it's taller than it is wide.
Yep. Yeah,
I pictured the big flat Danish with like
It's basically the same dough, the same sort of concept, just done in a
I didn't know that
round
shape.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that Danishes could not be flat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's exciting. I've learned a thing. The Danishes can they be all shapes or is it just like the two?
It's more the spirit of it, having the components and built.
What do you mean by that?
You can change the form, but the spirit of it, the core components. Still need to be in that realm. The dough needs to be of this classification. The components need to be
built in a format. Say Danish, they're talking more about the dough than the shape.
Predominantly.
But me, as just an ignorant consumer, I've always just assumed it was the shape, not the dough. Interesting. I'm learning all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So the banoffee is our flavor.
Mm-hmm.
The brioche and the Danish are both sort of types of dough, so this is sort of like a blend of the two
kind
types
of dough? The brioche is more... The outside encasing
brioche is the bread
structure,
type.
The yeah. bread, and then okay. Danish is sort of the category.
Yeah. Category, very good. Yep. Okay, okay, all right. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and grab myself a little piece here.
And then paired with that is a hazelnut cream.
Oh, on the end, I do see that there's cream in there. Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Oh, that smells heavenly.
We take the whole bananas and roast them real, real dark. They'll turn basically black in the oven. And then you break off the bottom portion of the banana and shoot it right out of its peel. You take that puree, and yeah, it's a very strange visual.
All right.
Squeezing the banana.
It's weird. It's very weird. But you can basically create a puree that is so concentrated in that banana flavor that you can incorporate that into a toffee sauce in replacement of heavy cream. And it still has the same sort of emulsifying properties. And you get this really luxurious, super banana heavy, but caramelized base overall note of flavor. And then throw that with a little bit of cream cheese and hazelnuts.
Yeah.
And it's just got a lot of complexity going into that one bite.
Well, and the whole structure of this, there's there's that creamy center that you're talking about, and then there's this like super fluffy bread, and then there's this like sort of caramelized exterior. Mm-hmm. What would you call that? Mm-hmm. The top layer. Like it's very... you don't realize all this stuff's going on inside of it, is what I'm trying to say. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah, it's very deceiving.
But, and so it's just the eating experience is really fascinating. Like, if we're talking about music, very much like this triad of these three things really working well together. And I'm sure there's more things that I'm not aware of, but all right, here we go.
I think with this one especially, there's an element of texture to it as well, because you get the soft richness of the dough, and then, like you were saying, that crispy, crunchy little bit on top kind of gives that a balance.
Yeah, it's sort of like all three at once, right? Yeah, cream, crunch, and fluff, or whatever you would call that one. Spongy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay. Everybody's going to be saying banoffee now.
I hope so.
Wow, okay. Yeah, the ones I was thinking of is nothing works with this, so I'm gonna have to punt here, but that's all right.
Well, is there
give me some other adjectives here? So I totally agree with you. That, so it's textural variety, which is a thing we can do in music, right? Okay.
Sure.
What were you about to say? I'm sorry.
It was interesting what you said about like how it's a Danish, but it's not something that you would associate with a Danish. So is there a composer out there that took classical music and put a sort of a spin on it.
Yeah, okay.
To where, like, is it classical music still?
Yeah.
By definition, yes, but different.
So we,
different than your typical.
Yeah, so we can say
classical
like
composer.
Genre bending in a way. Like, right? If Danish. So in music, you would say, you're saying your category, we would say genre, right?
Yep.
And so it's an unexpected twist on the genre. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was sort of.
I wish I had some specifics for you to work off of there.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
That's just an idea.
This is what I do. It has a richness, but it's a different, very different than the Eclaira. Mm-hmm. It needs a better word than that, than rich. It's I should have brought my thesaurus. I mean, I guess I have a phone, but you know. It'd be funny if I showed up with like a big hardback for every episode. But anyway, it's rich, but it's more approachable, I feel like, it's not like a decadent richness like the Eclair. I feel like
it's
I could easily have pounded that whole thing.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a little more
and then
subtle.
Gone back for a second.
Yeah.
Subtle, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to need to think here. You guys, there's so much going on that it has stumped me because there were so many fantastic flavors all at once that it was, it felt like I could choose literally anything. But that would be kind of meaningless. So what I think I'm going to do is La Création du Monde, the creation of the world. by Darius Mio, that sort of, I think, we're going to give this a list and we're going to try it. It sort of blends elements of early jazz with elements of ballet and classical.
Interesting.
And so we're going to try it. This may or may not work. Sometimes it don't work. Sometimes it don't work. And it's fine. As long as people come eat the thing, it doesn't really matter if it works. I was thinking that's sort of our trinity of jazz, classical, and ballet working together here. So we're going to try this by the French composer Mio. I guess it's another French composer. It makes sense with pastries to go with French composers. That's
It'll work.
Okay, so let's give a little bit of listen to this piece by Darius Mio. We've been listening to the creation of the world. I'm going to tell, hopefully we've been listening to some of the middle of it as well, not just the sort of slow introduction as the world is slowly born. Mio is pulling on African mythology for the creation of this piece and then mixing with jazz and ballet. I think it actually does kind of work. I don't know if it's, you know, perfect. I love the way that it's kind of unpredictable, which I think that thing was. Yeah. I had no idea what it was going to look like when I pulled it apart. And I'm like, wow. And I was very surprised and pleased with what I saw. But I was probably imagining it was going to be sort of muffin texture just by the look of it, right? And in fact, it was something very different, which I think when people probably heard this piece, they were expecting a traditional classical symphony kind of thing, and instead they get blaring horns and percussion that are sort of influenced by like real kind of early New York jazz and the New Orleans jazz of like the 19-teens and 20s. So it's unpredictable. It's also this little bit of crunch in the music, there's a little bit that I think there's just a little bit of crunch in this. There's a little bit of that like wah, kind of horn sound. And it's somehow both very light and also dark at the same time, which I think the lightness of the texture in the pastry, but also the sort of darkness of the caramelization. Mm-hmm. And then also toffee is sort of a blend of those.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my ramble. What do you guys think?
I think that's good.
Yeah.
My first initial thought was, in that piece, it seemed like you said it was about an African myth, correct?
Yes, of the creation of the world.
The creation of the world. So it's taking this thing and transforming it into something a little unexpected, mm-hmm. transforming this story into this piece of music that, like I said, it's a little unexpected, and I think that's kind of the same thing that happened with that pastry, where it's like you're taking the bananas and you're turning it into something
completely
different and unexpected, and
it
has that elements of its origin, but it's done in a different new way.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I really like the original, what you started on with sort of
the beginning of the
progression,
piece, yeah.
And then mm-hmm. the, sort of the subversive nature of this is what's expected, and now we have this. And what's neat about those sort of those pops, I guess, for lack of a better term, of loudness, the staccato of just the interspersed heavy sound in the middle of that is interesting for the flavor profiles, because you have the hazelnut, which is really going to round around everything, but the banana is always going to be the heavy punch right through.
Fantastic. All right, well, this has been really fun. I'm really glad that I have finally come to this place. As I said, I've driven by it many times.
Yeah, glad you're
here.
This
is fantastic. I will absolutely be back. I'm glad that you guys are doing so well. And
thank you.
Matt and Jesse, has been a pleasure to talk with you. So I highly recommend people come by. You don't necessarily need to bring your headphones and listen to classical music while you eat the delicious pastries, but you could.
We might play classical music here every once in a while.
Well, there you go. So. Yep. Perfect.
We'll probably play it the day it comes. Goes live.
Okay, wonderful. I would like to thank Jesse and Matt of the Leviathan Bakehouse. So thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Classical Pairings is a listener-supported podcast. Please support us by texting the word PAIR, P-A-I-R, to 202-858-1233 to help us keep bringing you the best craft food and beverage makers paired with classical music. Classical Pairings is a production of Classical Music Indie, and our producer is Daniel Porter. I hope you'll join me for Classical Pairings Live, an event series presented by the National Bank of Indianapolis. Beginning in August, each Classical Pairings Live is hosted by a local food and beverage partner, where you'll sample great food and beverage paired with live music by talented local artists. You can find out more about our next Classical Pairings Live event at classicalmusicindie.org. Cheers, and I'll see you next time.